As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to Spin Rate, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. My name is Drew Fairservice, and this is Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast, talking about your depressingly slumping Toronto Blue Jays. For as long as we can, as long as we have to, really. I'm being joined by, you know her, you read her every week. Every day on The Athletic, she is athletic staff writer covering the Toronto Blue Jays, Caitlin McGrath. Caitlin, how are you?
I'm doing better than the Blue Jays right now.
Who among us? Who among us can't say that? Blue Jays have lost, I believe, five games in a row. Does that sound right?
Yep, that's correct. I wrote today, which you can read right now, that the Blue Jays have lost five in a row, each more crushingly bad than the last.
It's not good. It's not a good time to be a Toronto Blue Jays fan. It is a good time to be someone who's looking to subscribe to The Athletic. If you want to read that thing that Caitlin just, that thing, it's a story. She wrote it today on the heels of the Blue Jays loss. If you want to read it and you don't subscribe to The Athletic yet, if you do, thank you. You're doing good work. If you haven't yet subscribed to The Athletic, I think you should go to theathletic.com/spinrate, where you can get a subscription at a low, low price of $1 a month. You can't beat it. And you go there and you tell them that we sent you. Everybody wins. Maybe not everybody, but like, it's good. It's good for you. Good for me. Good for Caitlin. Good for Cam on the ones and twos. You can subscribe to the podcast as well. Wherever you get your podcast, subscribe. If you want to leave us a like, you want to leave us a rating, you can do that. You can be positive. You can be truthful. Whichever one you prefer. I'm good either way. I read them sometimes. I won't even lie. I read them. Because maybe, you know, feedback, constructive or otherwise. We can we're going to talk about the Blue Jays for as long as we can until I have to stop talking about the Blue Jays and make us talk about West Ham United, who, of course, finished sixth this year in the Premier League for the first time in 25 years. They're going to play in Europe. I could not be more excited. It's so funny because they finished sixth and it's like not a, you know, it's sixth, like sixth. But it's also like an enormous accomplishment. And I'm very excited, and it was a terrific season. And if you follow me on Twitter, you know I tweet everyone who doesn't follow soccer. All of a sudden, it's like, why are these people tweeting in an accent at odd hours of the day and meaningless things? And it's like everyone switches like that, and it's like, oh, get in, then bloody hell! And like, I don't care. I like the Blue Jays. I've been doing this about the Blue Jays for a long time. My relationship with the Blue Jays is different. One of my things I like about West Ham and soccer is there's a little bit of distance, so I don't see interview shows. They're not, these guys aren't doing ads and stuff like that. It's just a thing that's over there a little bit, and I get to like invest in it emotionally, and I don't have to bother myself too much with like the other stuff, and I'm not trying to analyze it. I'm just like, boy, it's fun when they're good. When they're bad, it sucks. And right now they're good, and it's great. And I'm already like scheming. I got to figure out where they're going to play in Europe because I'm going to go watch a game. I don't know. We'll see. I've got my friend. I went to see West Ham once in England, One of my best friends lives in London. He's a Crystal Palace supporter. So he sat in the Palace section and I sat in the West Ham section. And we watched West Ham win 3-1 over Crystal Palace at the London Stadium. And it was great. We had the time of my life. It was so cold. Oh my God. It was unbelievably cold in January. And then we went out to Tayabs, which is a very famous Pakistani Indian food place in Shoreditch. And it was the best day. The best day ever. West Ham won 3-1. But now my plan is wherever they end up playing in Europe, whoever's in their group, I'm going to go. Don't tell my wife. Got to save those podcast dollars up. Off we go. So I can't help it. It's all I can think about all day long. So, and it's positive and it's fun. The Blue Jays, not so much right now.
Yeah, at least you have that to balance things out.
So about those Blue Jays, tell me if I'm wrong. Do people like me and people who are you follow on Twitter and people you interact with in your stories and the comments, do you think the fact that it's the Rays makes it worse? Does the fact that they lost to the Rays like this make people doubly crazy than maybe if it was just a normal bullpen meltdown, one after another?
I think so. Maybe not for all the reasons which it drives you crazy, but I certainly think... with any division opponent, it's obviously a tougher pill to swallow. I think with the Rays in particular, I think they were talking about this on the broadcast, but I don't remember a time when the games against the Rays were easy. Like they always seem to just be, even the wins seem kind of difficult. They always seem to be fairly close. When the losses happen, they seem to be very deflating losses. Feel like there was a handful last year. The Blue Jays tend to play the Rays, at least the last couple of years, they've played the Rays fairly competitively. But that almost makes the games and the losses harder to stomach, I think. I was actually thinking of this question and I was like, this is a story that maybe I'll do when things are back to normal. I don't know. It would be one of those stories where I'm like, I'll go up to a player and be like, this might be a stupid question, but humor me and let me see if I can make this something. Is it worse to lose a one-run game or is it worse to lose a blowout? Like, how do players feel about that? I wonder.
That's interesting. So I think about it this way, and this is sort of like a little bit of a statistical perspective. One-run games are luck in a lot of ways. Right, if you lose or win a bunch of one-run games, that's often where you'll see a team that kind of is a bit of a mirage. Mm-hmm. Say a team that comes out of nowhere and wins a bunch of games. An example that's off the top of my hand is like the 2011 Diamondbacks, for example. 2011, the Diamondbacks kind of came out of nowhere and were good. They made the playoffs and then they went back away and resumed being the Diamondbacks. One-run games are like a really strong luck metric. And if you lose a lot of one-run games or win a lot of one-run games, it can ruin your season, but it's not necessarily indicative of the talent of your team. Blowouts, for me, are like, that's the sign that your team is good. Or, conversely, bad. Because good teams don't get blown out, and they also do a lot of blowing out. And the example I'll give of this, to bring it back to what we're talking about, or what I'm talking about, and I'll get to what you're talking about. The 2015 Blue Jays had a terrible record in one-run games. They were 15-28 in one-run games. But they were 37-12 in blowouts. Mm-hmm. So they destroyed teams, as everyone remembers, and they won. And the other thing they did that only good teams do is they went on a long winning streak, kind of like what the Rays are doing right now. But I think the emotional thing, I think the blowout stuff is sort of, I think it's probably... easy. I think it's worth asking, but for me, I would guess it's probably easier to flush unless you're like one of the pitchers that had to wear it. Mm-hmm. Right. If you're a batter and you're like, I went 1-for-5 today, and maybe I kicked it in the outfield, but we lost, 11-3. It's like, whatever, back at it tomorrow. If whoever it is that gave up the bulk of those runs is probably like, yeah, I got shelled and it was dog shit. But the one run thing, it's, I can imagine it wears on you a little bit, unless you have that, we're going to go and win the next game by 6 or 7. Also worth noting, the Blue Jays in 2015, of course, we all remember, they had a losing record against the Rays even then. They were 9-10 against the Rays in 2015 when the Blue Jays were good and the Rays were not good. You know, it's another thing about this that... people kind of seem to kind of forget that the Rays were sort of bad for a while. Like, they just kind of ignore it. I think that there's like this narrative around the Rays that they're always this unkillable machine, but it's like, not really. They barely win.
Yeah, they were bad not that long ago. It really wasn't that long ago. They weren't like, they've gone through phases where they've been like bad, then they've just been like bad, then they've been mediocre. It has been more recent where they've turned into a team where like you're always don't sleep on the Rays, and they kind of sneak up on you as they're kind of doing right now. Because I mean, everyone's been talking about the Boston Red Sox and how they're, well, not necessarily running away with the division, but they've stayed atop the division basically the entire season so far. But now you look at it, the Rays are same record as the Boston Red Sox right now. So I mean, could be a matter of days between when the Rays overtake them, potentially.
The Rays are the team that like gets all credit and doesn't have to worry about being a disappointment, because it's like, oh, well, they're the Rays. They don't have any money. Of course they're bad, or of course they're mediocre. Of course they were under 500 for like 5 or 6 years in a row, you know, when the Blue Jays were good in 2015, 2016, and then, you know, of course, not so much 2017, the Rays weren't good. And then the Rays had a bit of like a wave that sort of came along. So everyone loves to hold the Rays up as the paragons of virtue, the great innovators of the game. But it's like, they made it to the World Series last year in a weird season. All full credit to them. They're good. But it is grating, because the Blue Jays cannot ever beat the Rays, it feels like. Even when they're good, they lose to the Rays.
It is a good point you make, because it does feel like, especially this year, the Rays almost like gave themselves permission to potentially be bad or potentially have low expectations, because you like trade away Blake Snell. You're like, well, what can we do? Maybe we're rebuilding. Maybe we're doing this. And then any way you look at it, you could say, well, the Rays, if they were bad, for example, if they weren't doing so well, you say, well, the Rays traded away one of their best starters, and so what did we expect? Of course they were going to take a step back. But then, as you say, you could also, then they play well, and then you look at them like, well, no one expected them to be here, and they traded away their best starter, and they're good again, and they're the Magic Rays. And so, like, it's almost this, like, you know, it's like, it's win-win for them, because it's either they had no expectations and they're bad, but no one cares because no one thought they'd be good, or they have no expectations and they're good and everyone says, well, you always discount the Rays and they're the Rays.
I don't think it's win-win for the Rays. I think there are zero stakes for the Rays. It doesn't matter if they win or lose as long as they maintain their budget, which is why they can do things. And I was on the radio today talking about this, because the host was like, oh, these Rays are just terrific. And I was like, seething with rage, but like Manuel Margot. So on the weekend, you know, Buck and Tabby were going on about how good Manuel Margot is off, and the Rays would not be a worse team with Tommy Pham playing right field for them. In addition to the fact that they gave up Jake Cronenworth in that deal, they would not be worse if they had Tommy Pham instead of Manuel Margot. What they would be more expensive, which is then a loss for the Rays. That's the only loss that matters to them. Are they paying too much? So they signed Blake Snell to this deal that looks great, but all that is cost certainty when they go to move him, you know, when they do. And yet everyone, we can all see these things coming a mile away. God only knows where, what's that big goof with the hair? What's his name?
Tyler Glasnow?
Glasnow. We God only knows where he's going to end up. If he has another great season, he's looking at some big R rewards. So either they'll try to get his name on some dirt cheap contract and whatever. But anyway, the point is, it does feel worse when it's the Rays, because it's infuriating, because they have a weird, like, it's, I wish I could put my finger on, you know, that I guess maybe one of the differences is it's like, especially when the Blue Jays are not playing well, like right now, where it's like the Rays band of faceless goons are good in the bullpen and the Blue Jays band of faceless goons are bad. And it's frustrating. We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I think we should really talk about that. I think, you know, the fact that they lost to the Rays are good about identifying talent. The Rays are good at identifying key skills. And I think that the Rays deserve credit for having a really, really athletic lineup, right? They have lots of guys that can really run, lots of guys that can run the bases, lots of guys that can do all kinds of stuff like that, make things happen on the bases, for, you know, forcing the issue, which, you know, guys like Buck and Tabby like, whichever it is, can be an attractive brand of baseball when there's stuff happening as opposed to kind of standing around waiting for a three-run home run. But the issues, the reason the Blue Jays lost this weekend was more about the Blue Jays than it was about the Rays at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, and like, I mean, you look at it also and it wasn't all bad for the Blue Jays. It's just like when it was bad, it was bad at the worst moment. Like you look at the game on Saturday and Robbie Ray couldn't have really been better. He pitched excellent. He's been excellent for the Blue Jays. And it's the one game or one of the few games where the offense just does not come through at all for the Blue Jays. And that's one of those times where we're probably going to look back at the whole season as a whole and look at a very few handful of times where the offense just wasn't firing for the Blue Jays, anyone, right? Or just not scoring. This loss on Sunday was, yeah, just the bullpen. Like and the thing is, like, I understand that people like to, you know, criticize bullpen management. Charlie called on the best reliever that he had in the ninth inning. Tyler Chatwood has been very good for the Blue Jays this year. He had a ERA below one. He was not walking a lot of guys. His command has been better. And he had a two-run lead, and he couldn't get it done. And, you know, Charlie pulled him, and then things got worse from there. Travis Bergen. Now, Travis Bergen was probably outmatched in that spot. That's a higher leverage spot than anyone would have penciled him in for back in March. But it is one of those things where, like, a bad bullpen blow up is going to happen every so often. Are they happening more often for the Blue Jays now? Yes, because they are not so much running on fumes, I don't think. I just think they're just having to rely on guys that simply aren't guys that can fill those roles. Like, they don't have a David Phelps anymore, or he's on the IL. Ryan Barucki's on the IL. You know, Julian Merriweather, a guy that was excellent for them to start the year, he's been out for a long time. And so they're just missing that firepower. They're missing a lot in their bullpen right now. And for a while they got away with it in April and the injuries didn't impact them as much, but it's really catching up to them now. And so, yeah. And the Friday game was also just, it was just a disaster. Like, it just, you have Marcus Semien hitting his out of this world. He's going for the cycle. And then they have not one, but two opportunities to score in extra innings with a man on second, and they can't. And it goes to 12 innings. How does a game in this day and age go to the 12th inning?
You have touched on the same issue in two different ways, which is to say the Blue Jays' lack of talent is being exposed now, right?
Like in the bullpen?
Well, and on the field.
Right, yeah, now. Well, all the injuries are certainly like
all the injuries, yeah. and forcing, you know, all injuries and underperformance have rendered the Blue Jays incredibly reliant on like six players, right? If Marcus Semien, Bo Bichette, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Teoscar Hernandez, Robbie Ray, and Hyunjin Ryu, and I guess you could probably throw Steven Matz in the mix too, if they don't win the Blue Jays a game, they're not going to win. The right now, with what you're getting from Danny Jansen, what you can expect to get from Reese McGuire, what you can expect to get from Santiago Espinal, what you're getting from Rowdy Tellez, what you are going to get from Jonathan Davis, what you're going to get from Joe Panik, it's not good enough. Like, they're not good enough. And it's doubly so when we all love to watch the Blue Jays slap it around like they did against the Red Sox, and they're hitting it to right field and they're slapping it here and slapping it there. But you realize why teams rely on the three-run home run, because when you get down to the bottom of the order and you've got three or four guys in your lineup that can't hit at all, suddenly the hits dry up. And you can, you know, Teoscar Hernandez can go the other way all day long, but he's standing there on second base watching Santiago Espinal be outclassed at the plate. He's watching Danny Jansen, like, just struggle mightily to make quality contact. He's watching Jonathan Davis, like, just look like a fifth outfielder at best, not a starting center fielder or a fourth outfielder. They're not good enough. Those players aren't good enough to play every day for a good team that's having to play against all other good teams. That's the thing that's sort of been unsaid in this. And I'm sure that, you know, you and I were talking off air, and we'll talk a little bit later, maybe even about the power rankings, but like, the Blue Jays are in tough. Their schedule is tough. So they need the lineup to be what the lineup is. And everyone's dealing with injuries, but the Blue Jays, it's magnified because they're playing other better teams. So suddenly you've got these gaping holes in the lineup and the runs dry up. Or you've got an opportunity to win the game in a high leverage spot, and then you've got a player who's not well suited to that offensive role. You've got Santiago Espinal at the plate. He's got a few knocks here and there, but, like, let's be real. And then you've got the manager telling him to bunt, because the manager has no faith in his ability to do anything else productive at the plate. Doesn't want him to strike out, doesn't want him to hit in double play, whatever it is. So now you're up against it. And then the manager's asking him to bunt. He can't bunt. They still bunt with him with two outs, with two strikes, which is so asinine. Like, give up at this point. Like, just, what's the worst that can happen? Is he really going to hit into a double play? Is that the real threat here? Maybe it is. But at the end of the day, this is a results business, and that shit didn't work. And then the same thing, you've got at the back of the bullpen, like, we're talking, honest to God, we're talking about Travis Bergen pitching in a high leverage spot, like, as high leverage as can be. And he's been a nice surprise out of the bullpen, but he throws one pitch and now he's again facing good hitters in a high leverage spot. And he didn't get hit around, but he couldn't find the strike zone because he's Travis Bergen. And I was thinking about this a lot, and the Blue Jays, when you watch the broadcasts, it's different when Dan Shulman isn't there. Buck and Tabby do their thing. But asking Travis Bergen to pitch in a high leverage spot is the same thing as asking Buck and Tabby to simulcast radio and TV. They are very, very ill-suited to one of those roles. And I was watching the Blue Jays game thinking, what would it be like right now if I was driving and listening to this game on the radio? And I was like, the answer is, I would have driven off the road into a ditch, into a tree. At one point, Robbie Ray was coming set about to throw his third pitch of the at-bat, and there had been no mention of either of the first two pitches at all. And then they were like, here comes a 2-0 pitch. And I was like, thank you. If I was driving, I would have been screaming. But luckily, it's Robbie Ray, so you know he's grunting his way through it. Right, you can, like, oh, there's one. What? There's the next one. Who knows what happened to those pitches? I mean, he didn't hit them. And I don't mean to criticize Buck and Tabby, because it's a difficult job. They're being asked to do something that they're not suited to do. They're being asked to do something that they don't have the skills or experience or ability to do. Just like the Blue Jays, because of the injuries, because of where the state of the bullpen, because they have three starters or two and a half, depending on what month you look at Steven Matz, they're putting an inordinate amount of pressure on their bullpen. And then there's only so many outs in those arms out there, and they've been asked to do too much, and they've been asked to do stuff that they shouldn't have been asked to do at any point, and then they get hurt. And then guys like Tyler Chatwood is having a great year. He's a good pitcher. I don't begrudge him, but those are the margins that you're working on. If Tyler Chatwood comes out in the ninth inning and isn't able to do, you know, pitch to the corners like he does, suddenly you're all out of ideas. And it's not an indictment of the front office. It's not, it's just, that's the shit that's happening right now when I watch. And it's like, you see them against the Rays, and the Rays are great at identifying these guys. They bring these goons out of nowhere. These one guy's big, one guy's little, one guy throws up over his head, one guy throws it out of the dirt, but they all throw 96 and it's all moving like 2 feet because God only knows what they're spraying on their hands in the dugout. But nonetheless, they look overmatched. They don't look as good, and it sucks, but it's not going to get better until more guys start coming and they don't have to rely on marginal big leaguers to carry the load.
Yeah. Well, I also think that you done. I also think that, like, as you say, I wonder if in July things are a little bit different. This 5-game stretch here is just entirely forgettable. It's really hard to say because I hear both sides of it. You can't necessarily say, you know, games never matter because ultimately every game does matter. The reason why you say, well, it's only May and it's early is just you understand that there's a lot of time to make up for wins here. They, as we've pointed out on this podcast before, they still have 19 games left against the Orioles. They have a lot of other games against teams that they should be better than. They will certainly squeak out wins against teams that are as good as them. They will probably win some games that they shouldn't win. And that's the thing with baseball, right? Like it sort of that generally does sort of even itself out a little bit. But I would say that this could be the worst that it gets for the Blue Jays, potentially, right? Like there's a lot of injuries. Could they have more injuries? Certainly. But I mean, they've had some of the worst injuries you could potentially have. Like they've lost their best player. Like George Springer has not played for the team. And that's an issue. Like they, that's a big issue, obviously. And then as you pointed out, there's a lot of other guys that are being asked to fill roles that they, probably are not equipped to do, like Santiago Espinal. Yes, Kevin Biggio had some issues to start the year, but I think ultimately Kevin gives you more at the plate with just his ability to get on base and some other things that he does. He can hit some. He can walk into a few home runs every now and then. And now he's on the injured list, so he joins up a bunch of other guys that are injured. And so, you know, I think it's a really bad stretch for the Blue Jays here. I think, though, like, I don't even know, not less than a week ago, they were a team that was 6 games above 500, and now they're a team that's just 1 game above 500, and it does really change very quickly. It is concerning, though, how quickly they can fall out of the race in the AL East, though, because the Yankees, Rays, and the Boston Red Sox are all playing fairly well right now. Like, the Boston Red Sox jumped out to a big lead in the division. The Yankees and the Rays have both been playing really well lately, playing against good teams, too. I think the Yankees were against the White Sox this weekend. And so if you look at the standings, I don't have them in front of me, but I looked at them earlier today. The Blue Jays are at 23 wins, and I think the Yankees are at somewhere in like 27 or 28 wins, and then both the Red Sox and the Rays are at 29 wins. So it's not a huge gap, but the Blue Jays are playing one more against the Rays, and then they have 3 against the Yankees. And if it doesn't go well, that could be 4 more games behind the division leaders.
And the issue is right now that they're not as good as those other teams. Maybe the Red Sox. You know, the Red Sox are have a lot more potential for pumpkinry than the maybe the Rays or definitely the Yankees. But I guess the question is, like, these issues are not necessarily going to resolve themselves quickly. Okay, because we think about, okay, so if say the Blue Jays bring up Alek Manoah tomorrow. Okay, so Alek Manoah is starting, and that means Ross Stripling is in the bullpen, which is like, okay, that can be helpful. But it's Ross Stripling going to, you know, which is, it will never hurt. But like, that's a very incremental. So whose innings does he take? He takes Jeremy Beasley's innings or Ty Tice's innings away, right? Or maybe not. Or he moves more to the middle, and you start to slide some other guys down a little bit. Okay, so then Thomas Hatch is healthy, so you bring him in, and then now I couldn't even think of who the other starter would be.
Nate Pearson.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so if Stripling's out of the rotation, like, there's still a spot, right? If you've got Mats, Ryu, Ray, Stripling, and then who's the fifth guy right now?
Well, yeah, because they sent Anthony Kay down.
Exactly. So you bring Stripling, you move Stripling to the bullpen, but you're still not. There's no other additions to the bullpen. If you bring up Hatch tomorrow and Manoa, and then you bring up Nate Pearson, then it's like, okay, now we got a lot. Now, again, maybe we'll see what happens. But like, the issue is in the bullpen is still the fireworks going off. There's issue in the bullpen is still. It's still unresolved. And like, okay, if you get Julian Merriweather back, I mean, he's thrown four and a third terrific innings. But
we're really relying on him to come back and just carry the bullpen.
But it's hard. It's tough on the Blue Jays because, again, when you think about the bullpen, it is so much of this like found money, right, in its own way because they've gotten good performances from the Chatwoods and whomever else is of the world. But at the end of the day, the guy they signed with the intention of him being one of their most key relievers isn't going to pitch for them at all. So, but who else has got to come back still? Oh, you get Baraki back. Okay. That's something. You get David Phelps back. Okay. You're getting there, but that's what it takes. It's going to take all these guys coming back and sort of reshuffling what you've got. And Charlie Montoyo, again, he got all kinds of credit for managing the bullpen when nobody was walking anybody and everyone's throwing 97 and throwing strikes. And now he's probably getting too much blame. It's a lot easier to manage the bullpen when you've got good and reliable arms out there and you're not putting so much pressure on the same guys every single night and asking them to do the heavy lifting all the time. More spin rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
I guess that's the question. It's like, while we might forget this 5-game blip, when it comes to time, and it is still early, what's the timeline for recovery like? Like when are we going to start to see the better version of the Blue Jays? And not is it going to be too late, but is the better version of the Blue Jays then good enough to compete? There's still a lot of question marks, even if we're talking about Manoa and Hatch and Pearson and some of these other guys coming back.
Right. And it also like kind of depends on how big the hole is they dig themselves. Because like one of the better things about April is that as much as the injuries mounted, they really handled them fairly well. Like they really just hovered around that 500 mark. And for the first month, that's more than fine to do. Then they really started to get it rolling a little bit. Like I said, they were like 6 games above 500. It really looked like they were like finding their game and everything was clicking. And then you have these 5 games. And so that's why sometimes I think, well, you know, it's a week ago we were talking about the Blue Jays, like really, you know, playing their best baseball. And then now 5 days later, they're playing their worst baseball. And it's probably somewhere more in between. I mean, Charlie obviously is the type of guy that usually looks at the positive side of things. And he made the point that he talked to the team afterwards, today's loss, and said that, keep playing the way you guys are playing. Like you're not playing bad baseball. It's just some tough losses and, you know, kind of like quote unquote, like don't really hang your heads type of thing. And to some extent, I mean, I don't think they've been playing, they're not booting it around, right? Like they haven't been playing awful baseball. They have not been getting some of the timely hitting that they were getting before. I think one of the things too is like, you kind of made the point is like, one of those guys at the bottom of the lineup is like just not doing the sort of like the one play of the game that helps them, you know? Like, and I think in the previous games, like we saw like a guy like Josh Palacios, like have a good couple good nights there, and that was enough, right? Like that was just the timely hitting they needed at the bottom. There's been other, like as you said, Santiago Espinal, he had a few good games where he was, you know, 3 for 4, whatever it was enough. Like that's all they needed in that bottom half of the lineup. But now they're not getting any of that. And actually like the top of the lineup has been pretty good. I mean, Semien's like the best hitter in baseball right now, or one of the best hitters in baseball right now. Vlad, other than Vlad, who is the other best hitter in baseball. And Bo has, you know, I don't know that Bo's really been at his peak, but he still, even if he's not at his best, he still gets like a hit a game. Like he very rarely doesn't get a hit or like whatever. He's making it work. Teoscar Hernandez has been excellent. And, you know, your boy, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is coming along too.
Is he? No,
he is.
You're right. You're right that like the top feels, of the order is-
it feels worse than the five losses and how they've lost them, I think is making it feel worse because the losses have just been like late. Like the ninth inning, they blew a save with Dolis against the Red Sox and JD Martinez hit the 2-run home run. Like that hurt. Then they couldn't score when Robbie Ray had a great outing. They had the, you know, so many chances in that extra innings, they didn't score. And in that game, actually, it was the top of the lineup that really wasn't coming through because they had multiple chances. And then this game on Sunday here was just the bullpen imploding. And so I'm just saying, like, I mean, it goes back to my question is like, would it be better for fans if the Jays just lost all these games 8-0? Would that be more crushing? I don't know.
You know, I don't think it would because I mean, think back to last year. Right? Think back to last year when the Blue Jays would play the Yankees and get destroyed. And then the Blue Jays had a couple blowouts of their own. But it was like, those games were not competitive. But it's like, I think especially, there's the mental piece, especially from a fan perspective, is you sit there and you watch the game, and these games, they are endless. And then it ends so badly. Where if you're watching the Blue Jays play the Yankees and it's, you know, 9-1 in the fourth inning, well, you're like, well, I'm off to do something else. I got to see what my girl Mayor of Easttown is up to. I'm not sticking around to like dig through this. But if you've invested and you're there all the way, especially a game like the Blue Jays are like, oh my gosh, they're going to win one. They're going to get this one after a couple two rough nights, a couple rough nights where there's weirdness and bunts and all that other kind of crap. And then they blow it and you're like, wow, baseball sucks. Why do I do this to myself? But I think that I don't think that we're too early to start thinking about upgrades, but I think that if you are the Blue Jays, that is something that you do need to kind of think about a little bit, about positional upgrades. You know, as you get into June, and that's when that sort of trade talk will start to pick up. I'd love to see the Blue Jays be proactive on the trade market when the time comes. You know, the Yankees, I always admire Brian Cashman for like, he's always first. The trade deadline might be two or three weeks away.
Oh,
there's just fireworks in my neighborhood. I thought I closed the window, so it doesn't really matter. Okay, hold on. All right, we'll see if that's better. I'm not hopeful. They sounded really close.
Yeah, anyway, sounded like your neighbors or something.
Yeah, I think it was like the street over, like this little court kind of like over there. I think it might have been in that court. I always admire Brian Cashman because he finds or sees a need or a player that is the right fit for him and his team. And he goes out and makes that deal whenever the deal presents itself, not like dragging his feet, not, oh, we got to make sure that we're haggling and, you know, we don't want to move too early. Like the Blue Jays know what they need. Right? They need an upgrade at third base and they might need an upgrade behind the plate. Unless you are thinking that, you know, if we wake up in September and Gabriel Moreno and Alejandro Kirk are the Blue Jays catching platoon, that would be wild. But Mourinho is, it looks great in Double A. It's a long way from the big leagues. But and you know, it'll be interesting to see when Springer comes back what the DH thing does. Obviously, Rowdy Tellez right now is playing himself out of a job, or even playing himself out of contention for a job, which is a shame. Rowdy Tellez is so easy to root for, and he looked so good last year, and now he looks lost. I was really frustrated on Saturday night when they pinch hit him and he comes up and it's 3-0 and he's facing, what's the name, Fairbanks, the big tall one. And I don't know if he got a red light or just decided he was going to take 3-0 and he took a fastball 3-0, and it was on the inside half, and I was like, man, what are you doing? And then he struck out on two pitches because the Fairbanks was able to go back to the off-speed pitch, which is really befuddling Tellez. I don't know if that was Rowdy being like, didn't want to swing 3-0, or if he got that take sign from the dugout. If you got the take sign from the dugout, I'm mad, personally. Because, like, what are you sending him up there to do? To try to draw a walk? No. Send him up there to try to hit the ball into the outer space. Come on. But they have some upgrade potential around the diamond. We'll have to see again, Lourdes Gurriel, my boy, Lourdes Gurriel, you know, hitter's hit, if he's able to resume hitting as he was. But again, I think, you know, is he hurt? What's his deal?
No, he's fine. He was playing today.
He played first base the other night, which again, says a lot about what they think about his defense.
Well, yeah, I wasn't actually paying that much attention on the Saturday game because I was off that day, so I wasn't on the call. So I don't know. I don't remember really what the reasoning was. I think it was something about, I don't know, wanting to give Vlad a day off.
Which is fair. I get that.
And then they're not playing Rowdy probably because of the pitching matchup, like the handedness maybe. So I think Lourdes was back in the outfield today. And well, it's interesting what you say with George Springer, though, because I think that at one time, you know, back in March or whenever, when we didn't know how the season would pan out, it was all, how are you going to fit all these guys and you have so many at bats and there's five guys and how are you going to, and it's now it's like, you're right. It's easy. It's like George Springer comes back and then, I mean, the decision is like, what do you do with the outfielders? Because I think Teoscar Hernandez has been fine in the outfield. Randall Grichuk's obviously been better. But what do you do? Like, would you move Teoscar Hernandez to left field and then, like, be DHing Lourdes Gurriel? Like, I don't know. That'll be kind of interesting to see what they do there. Or they probably, like, more likely they'll just kind of rotate it around so there won't really be an actual pattern. It will be like, you know, one day Lourdes will be DHing and then the next day Teoscar Hernandez will be DHing and that kind of thing. And they'll just kind of cycle through that. And then Rowdy will get in there sometimes and whatever it may be. So like, I don't know that there's going to be any patterns, but certainly I don't think they're going to be like, you know, there's not going to be too many guys who need at bats necessarily. Cause you, as you say, like Rowdy Tellez isn't really earning the at bats right now. I don't even know how long he'll be on the team if they have to make all these moves and stuff. Like he might, I don't know if you, I guess Joe Panic's back on the roster now and Espinal might be gone when Cavan comes back, but I don't know. There's other things you might want to keep. You might want to keep him around though, because his versatility and he does play a nice third base. And like you say, and then they can use Cavan more in a versatile role, whatever it may be. There's decisions coming up, but it's not like they have the sort of good problem to have where there's like too many guys needing at bats. Like they're actually at a point now where they need George Springer to come back and take some at bats because there's too many holes in the lineup.
I agree. And I think that something else we've talked about or haven't talked about as much in this episode, but it is the kind of state of Randall Grichuk, who's kind of reverting to form, which is fine, right? Like he is who he is, but I don't think there's not a lot of value in having Randall Grichuk playing right field if he's hitting as Randall Grichuk hits. You know, I think that his value comes as a center fielder, and the difference in defense between he and Jonathan Davis, I don't think is significant enough to warrant playing Davis there over him. Jonathan Davis has had he's had a couple hits over the weekend. You know, he's actually got hits in three straight games going into today, I guess. But I don't know. I'm just like, if Grichuk needs to play center field for me, you know, Teos can play right, and then Lourdes Gurriel can play left. If they are really dead set on the defense, and they're really worried about what Lourdes can do in the outfield, well, that's a problem. But I don't know. There's lots of machinery, lots of machinations still to come, lots of changes. You know, when the Blue Jays start to get healthier, hopefully some of the kind of mainstays get the chance to play, and then we get a chance to see the real 2021 Blue Jays, because we haven't quite seen that yet. Caitlin, what's going on? What do you got coming up this week? I know you're working on the power rankings.
Yeah, it's my week for power rankings again. I can't reveal what they are. I actually don't. I was saying before off air, I don't know because I haven't looked. We tally them up at the end of the night. They're due in by a certain time for all the writers. They have to submit their rankings, and then we tally them all up. And I haven't done that yet. So I actually don't know the final results as I'm talking. I'll look right after this is done and figure it out. But I can take some guesses who will be at the bottom. I can take some guesses who will be at the top. I think the Blue Jays will probably be somewhere in the upper half of the middle, I would guess.
Dare to dream.
Yeah, but everyone check them out tomorrow. They will be up sometime Monday morning. And they're always a fun time. It was a fun read. Come get angry at where the Blue Jays rank, or be happy where the Blue Jays rank. I don't know.
Come get angry. Come drop Caitlin a note in the comments. Tell her you're reading. Say what's up. I'm sure there'll be lots of exciting stuff to come this week. It's always fun when it's not fun, but when the team's bad, there's always lots of stuff to chew on when the team is bad. So. Then they're bad right now. It's real talk. But Vlad is good. Bo Bichette is who he is. Randall Grichuk is who he is. Marcus Semien is going to get rich. Marcus Semien and Robbie Ray both playing themselves into being like wealthy men, which congratulations to them. Bless it.
Perhaps not with the Blue Jays, though.
Oh, yeah. They are pricing themselves out of the Blue Jays' pocketbook. Not unlike Jesse Lingard priced himself out of West Ham's price range by coming on loan from Manchester United and scoring just goal after goal and looking every bit the part of an international staple who will suit up for England at the Euro. Too much for West Ham unless they can really move some money around. And I would love to see them keep Lingard without giving up Declan Rice. Please, please, please. Please don't sell Declan Rice. That's my shout out for the week. It's a holiday here in Canada. So everybody who we hope listens to this while you're chilling on Victoria Day, letting off fireworks, neighborhood kids are screaming. I don't know. I hope Cam cuts some of that, but not all of it because, you know, you got to keep it real here.
Yeah. It was a lively moment.
A lively moment of like very close by fireworks, which is, which is always fun. So if you are in Canada, I hope you enjoy Victoria Day when you hear this. I hope you have a lovely day and a lovely week into the end of May. Caitlin, I hope you have a lovely week as well.
Thank you.
Speaking of Canada Day, if you listened to last week's spin rate, when I talked to Alexis Burdnicki about some Canadians that are going to get drafted, if you haven't checked that out, please go back and do that. It was a great talk about that, and as well as all the different challenges and issues that are plaguing the game that we care about so much, and different ways and different places that there is opportunity to fix and move better and make more equitable for more fans and more people and just have a bigger tent. So go check it out. Make sure you read Caitlin. Read the power rankings. Read what she's got to say about the Blue Jays weekend that was at theathletic.com/spinrate. Her name is Caitlin. My name is Drew. We'll talk to you next time on Spin Rate.